Welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast for March 29th, 2011. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and today Thomas Graber will be joining me to talk about a paper from his group that appears in the current issue of Science Signaling. This paper reports results from a phosphoproteomics analysis of a BCR-ABL-driven leukemia cell line. BCR-ABL is a tyrosine kinase that doesn't exist in normal cells. It's created by a genetic rearrangement that fuses two genes, BCR and ABL. This fusion protein is associated with a subset of the cases of two types of leukemia, B-cell acute lymphoblastic leukemia and chronic myelogenous leukemia, which is also known as CML. The BCR-ABL fusion protein plays an important role in the progression of these leukemias, in part by activating Src family kinases. In the current study, Graber's group used a phosphoproteomics approach to identify signaling networks that affect the ability of BCR-ABL to activate Src family kinases. Graber spoke to me on the phone from his lab at the David Geffen School of Medicine at UCLA. Welcome, Dr. Graber. Thank you for talking with me.
Thank you for your interest in our topics.
How does the BCR-ABL fusion protein contribute to the progression of cancer, in this case, leukemia?
All cells are bathed in nutrients and could pretty much grow at any time, but they need the right signals to tell them that it is appropriate time to grow. And normally that's controlled through cell-cell communications and other mechanisms, but in leukemias and cancers, those signals will be provided artificially by mutations and oncogenes, and BCR-ABL is in that class.
BCR-ABL is a tyrosine kinase, and there are several tyrosine kinase inhibitors that are commonly used as cancer therapies. Do these work on BCR-ABL?
Yes. In fact, BCR-ABL was involved in some of the pioneering work in that regard, some of the first tyrosine kinase inhibitors that had demonstrated clinical usefulness were developed around BCR-ABL, and these are now some of the success stories of this mode of treatment and were part of the inspiration for much of the effort going towards tyrosine kinase inhibitors.
But in many cancers, cells will often end up developing resistance to the inhibitor.
That is correct. The cancer cell is a very plastic cell where many mutations are occurring, and often either through those mutations or the preexistence of cells that are resistant because of the mutations they carry, you will get tumors that will develop a resistant subpopulation of cells. And it is very common for this type of resistance to develop, and is one of the major problems that's been identified with tyrosine kinase inhibitors. Despite their incredible success, it's realized that more work needs to be done to figure out how to avoid this type of resistance.
In the case of BCR-ABL-driven leukemias, how do the cells become resistant to the kinase inhibitors? Or what mechanism do they use to become resistant?
There are multiple mechanisms, two that stand out. One is mutations that actually occur in the BCR-ABL kinase itself and make the kinase resistant to the inhibitor that's targeting it. One example would be mutations that add a bulky residue and then provide a steric hindrance, preventing the drug from coming in and binding in the way it normally would. And that mutant form of BCR-ABL is then resistant to the drug. Certain drugs are being developed and in trials now which try to address that problem head on. And then there's additional mechanisms, usually involving the activation of alternative pathways that provide the signal that BCR-ABL would be providing even when it gets shut off.
And some of those mechanisms are through the Src family kinases?
There is clinical data that shows that some of the patients with leukemias that are resistant to BCR-ABL inhibitors show elevated Src kinase activity. And from what we know about Src kinases, this would be a potential explanation to why those tumors are resistant to the drug, that even when BCR-ABL is inhibited by the drug, the Src kinase activity maintains high and provides signaling for the cell.
And that's what you addressed in your current study, correct? You looked at the mechanism of Src family kinase activation in BCR-ABL-driven leukemias.
That's correct. We wanted to apply our phosphoproteomics approach, which is an approach that allows us to look more globally at the signaling events happening within cancer cells, with particular focus on tyrosine kinase signaling. And we wanted to pick a clinically relevant problem and see what we could learn about how two proteins that are involved in the leukemia, how they interact, what are the types of crosstalk and other mechanisms involved that make them work together to drive the tumors. And that's why we focused in on Src kinases. They're one step downstream of BCR-ABL in terms of the signaling cascades, and they have implications in being very important in driving the leukemia, data that's been provided by mouse models of BCR-ABL-driven leukemia, and they have this clinical connection to resistance.
What did your phosphoproteomics analysis reveal about the activity of these kinases in leukemias?
So one of the things, as we compared our results to what was known in the literature, and we ranked the phosphorylation changes we were seeing by how strongly they were affected by how we were perturbing the signaling network. And when we looked to see which events were most strongly affected by perturbation at the Src kinase level, we found that many of the events that had a strong reaction were involved in negative feedback mechanisms. This was insight we got from just literally looking through the literature and understanding what had been understood previously about these phosphorylation events. This taught us that in the context of a very strong signal from a hyperactivated oncogene like BCR-ABL, the cell does enact its negative feedback mechanisms trying to shut down that signaling. And so we continued to study that to try to understand more about how this negative feedback is being activated, why it's insufficient to really shut down signaling, and how it changes the balance of signaling between different pathways.
Those negative feedback mechanisms are sort of like defense mechanisms of the cell. The cell responds to aberrantly high levels of signaling by activating negative feedback mechanisms to counteract that aberrantly high signaling.
Yes, I think that idea of a defense mechanism or a prevention of too much signaling is true. Oncogenes need to provide a signaling level, but if they provide too much, that may be also a problem for the cell. And it may take the right balance of that positive signal interacting with the negative feedback to give a kind of a physiological level that can keep the cell in a proper state. It's also true to remember that these negative feedback mechanisms really evolved to deal with normal signaling situations so that when you have some kind of stimulus perhaps coming from outside the cell and that stimulus goes away, that these negative feedback mechanisms are then involved in just shutting down the signaling and returning to a more baseline or quiescent state. And in a cancer context, they may be attempting to do that, but the signal never goes away, and they therefore fail to do that.
Given what your phosphoproteomics analysis revealed about these negative feedback mechanisms, does that offer any predictions for how cells are developing resistance to the tyrosine kinase inhibitors? Are they likely to be developing resistance by altering these negative feedback mechanisms?
Just as when normal signaling stops and the cell needs to turn off that signaling with these negative feedback mechanisms, tyrosine kinase inhibitors also somewhat rely on these same mechanisms shutting down all the signaling that's been activated by the oncogene once the oncogene is inhibited by the drug. And so these negative feedback mechanisms do become important in how the cell will respond to the oncogene being shut off. One of the concepts that emerged from studying our data was that the negative feedback mechanisms that get activated seem to crosstalk between different pathways. So when Src signaling activates negative feedback mechanisms that are designed to inhibit Src signaling, those negative feedback mechanisms don't have perfect specificity and also end up inhibiting BCR-ABL signaling as well. The exact mechanisms by which the oncogene escapes these negative feedback mechanisms can become important, for example, in the kinetics of once the oncogene is shut off, how quickly will all of the downstream signaling that it's activated also be shut off? And the kinetics of that could depend on whether the cell finds that lack of signaling problematic and therefore enters an apoptotic state, or whether other signaling is able to come back and replace that and keep the cell alive. And so balance between positive and negative signaling can influence what's going to happen when you shut off the positive signaling.
Does your analysis suggest any ways that you might be able to treat these sorts of leukemias to avoid the development of tyrosine kinase inhibitor resistance?
By looking closely at SARC signaling and how that interacts with BCR-ABL, we were hopeful that we could identify other players in that subnetwork that could become targets in clinical therapeutic approaches. It does look as though one will need to target both BCR-ABL and other regions of the network, and I think the negative feedback mechanisms and the phosphorylation events and kinases involved in those networks will become potential targets to modulate and supplement kinase inhibition of BCR-ABL.
What you've learned about the network architecture in this particular leukemia cell line you were looking at, are the lessons learned from that network connectivity likely to be applicable to other types of cancers? Since the different types of cancers have different molecular mechanisms that maintain them.
This study can help in other cancers in two different ways. One, it is true that the SARC kinases are involved in many different cancers. They're typically not mutated and don't become oncogenes themselves, but a lot of the oncogenic signaling goes through SARC kinases, and they've been highly implicated in contributing to the cancer phenotype. And so these negative feedback mechanisms and the balance between the positive and negative signaling likely does have other roles in other cancers, although, again, the context may determine the exact details. I think another way that our results and our approach can be helpful is that it kind of shows how once you narrow in and have a focus, how you can use global approaches to gain more information about the network and the interconnections. And I think some of that will translate at the experimental level on how to approach learning more about other types of cancer.
Thank you, Dr. Graber, for talking about your work.
Thank you very much.
That was Thomas Graber, senior author of a research article published in the March 29th issue of Science Signaling. That paper's by Ruby and colleagues, and it's titled Global Phosphoproteomics Reveals Crosstalk Between BCR-ABL and Negative Feedback Mechanisms Controlling SARC Signaling. And that wraps up the Science Signaling podcast. If you have any questions or suggestions, please write to us at sciencesignalingeditors@aaas.org. This show is a production of Science Signaling and of AAAS, Advancing Science, Serving Society. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and on behalf of Science Signaling and its publisher, the American Association for the Advancement of Science, thanks for listening.